Hey everybody, I'm Jeff, and this is Casual Chats in a Parallel Universe. My dad and I have been having daily conversations about family, history, life lessons, movies, news, music, and more. Now we are sharing these chats with you. So welcome to our podcast, and we hope you enjoy.
Hey.
The wheels are turning.
Yeah.
And we are recording right now.
My blood sugar is up slightly, so I have some actual thoughts going on.
We have cookies in front of us.
Wow.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome to another episode of your favorite, what was it?
What, casual chats or father-son?
The patter, the soothing patter in your life.
Soothing
casual chats.
Oh.
Yes.
This stuff is meant to soothe.
Welcome to casual chats.
Oh.
And your soothing patter.
Oh.
That's what you called it. That was your... Boy,
okay. Well, goes to show you.
Getting old. Here we go. Track. We're only what?
Okay.
We're only a couple months away from the big B day. So
yeah,
you know that's
big 8-0.
I can understand why we're forgetting things already.
This is how
it begins.
Starts in the '50s, actually.
So I was thinking, since the NFL draft was last night. First round of the NFL draft was last night.
Maybe
we could pick the quarterback into,
for the Chicago Bears.
Yeah, the number one pick.
Ooh.
went to the Bears and quarterback, and there was a little bit of controversy. And
what was that?
The Atlanta Falcons also picked a quarterback, Michael Penix Jr. out of Washington. He was in the national championship game this year against Michigan.
Yeah.
Didn't quite finish the job. But before they had picked Michael Penix Jr., they signed Kirk Cousins as a free agent out of Minnesota to a multi-year deal of up over, $100 million-plus dollars.
Really?
And so they signed him and then went into the draft and then picked a quarterback with their first round pick, with the number 8 pick in the draft. And so fans are upset.
What was the thinking there? The Cousins would carry the team for
a few years.
Nobody
seems to know, because Penix is not a young pup. He's like 28 years old. So the Cousins contract is 3 years as of right now.
Yeah.
And so if Cousin plays out the contract, I mean, Penix will be over 30 before he ever sees a regular snap, if they keep him. So it seemed like Arthur Blank wasn't happy with the pick. The GM has some splaining to do. And there's some...
You mean the owner? You don't think the owner was aware?
It doesn't seem that seems like he was maybe taken a little off guard. I mean, who knows? Maybe the owner's like, hey, the GM, giving the GM the room and...
Okay.
You know, or maybe they had another plan and the GM pivoted at the last second, you know?
Was Blank in the room?
Well, there's video of Blank coming into the room, and it seems there's some heavy conversation going
on. Wow.
Like,
Arthur needs to get...
What the fuck are you doing
in the meeting room?
I'm telling you.
Wow.
So
I'm so shocked that an owner... I just assumed the owners were right there.
I don't know.
In the so-called war room.
You know, I mean, it seems like some are and some aren't. I mean, it seems like some owners are more hands-on than others.
Yeah, that's probably true.
And yeah. I mean, what do you hire a GM for? You know, I mean,
well, it depends on the split. I mean, every team, they've got their own way of structuring, who is either... there's one person that's solely responsible for the draft, or maybe there's two that are jointly responsible. I don't know. I mean, I remember when, back in the day with the Jaguars.
Oh boy, here we go.
When Tom Coughlin was hired, as GM and the coach. So he ran everything. And I think there are a few teams that still do that.
Yep.
But it's you know, again, with the owners, some of the owners are very, I agree with you. Some of the owners are very involved, and others just are hands off. They just look at it, you know, just from an investment generating money through the operation of the team. So,
sure.
Who knows?
Yeah. But so,
when the point is,
well, no. I mean, it's just, you know, since the draft was going on, I thought maybe we could get into a little football talk.
You know,
maybe we could.
Okay.
I mean, so when
you'll be leading this then.
Oh, all right. Well, I mean, when you were growing up as a kid, I mean, I know you played football briefly, right?
Yeah.
In high school.
Very briefly.
With some aspirations of playing in college, but, you know.
Yeah.
That was fleeting.
Well, I mean, I went out as a walk-on, and then after I got steamrolled a couple of times in practice, I said, this is crazy.
Oh, so you never even played in a game?
No.
Oh, I thought.
In college?
No, I'm talking about in high school.
Oh, no. I played more. I played, but it was all intramural stuff. It wasn't. I wasn't part of a high school football team.
You weren't on the team.
No, I played. But, I mean, we had some. I mean, it was more Sandlot stuff. But, I mean, it was pretty intense. I would say the games I played in were I think just as intense as, you know, and without pads. I mean, you're out there killing each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, mayhem was ensuing. But no, I always just love football.
So you went to college and you tried to walk on?
No, I did a walk-on. I walked on at Florida State.
Oh, boy.
I just figured, I could, you know, this. And they just treated me like I was a blocking dummy. I mean, I was a little over 6 feet, weighed, 185, 190, something like that.
Yeah.
And
I mean, that's pretty skinny for 6 feet.
Yeah. But they were, I mean, I wanted to, my idea was I would go out for, like, you know, linebacker.
Right.
And
that's still pretty light.
I got torched. I just remember getting steamrolled.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I just couldn't. It was obvious that this was just silly.
Right.
So I said, that's enough of that.
So what was this was like 62?
60. Well, I graduated it was 62. Yeah, it was the fall of 62.
Right.
Yeah.
And so was Florida State, I mean, anywhere near the perennial powerhouse that they became or are today?
I'm trying to think. The coach back then, I think, was a guy named Bill Peterson. Might have been, I don't know. He's the one that, they were pre-Bobby Bowden. I don't know. They used to have some interesting quarterbacks. They were able to get some interesting quarterbacks. They would pull students from Ohio, and they got a guy named Steve Tenzi,
mm-hmm.
Who ended up in the pros. That was a quarterback, and they also obviously, you know, they had receivers like what was his name? We called him Sticky Fingers. He had eight pounds of stickum on his hands.
Yeah.
That played for the Oakland Raiders.
Okay.
But they didn't win a whole lot, but I don't know. They put a few guys into the pros. I had a good friend he became a good friend when I was in law school, Keith Kinderman, who played back in those days when I was in undergraduate school.
Right.
And Keith ended up with, I think he ended up playing for the Chargers for a while, and then, you know, ended up in law school with me. And he told me he remembered me from when I went out for the team on, you know, as a walk-on. And they were enjoying me getting killed out there just watching. He said, what kind of an idiot were you going out for? Anyway, but to go back to your question, Florida State, you know, Florida was the dominant team in the state. They just, they just drew, first of all, they drew up from all the Florida schools.
Sure.
That was the big thing. And then, they got players from all over. But there, you know, they didn't put many certainly didn't put any quarterbacks in the pros, because they ran, you know, they were running, you know, play sets that just were, they were, you know, lightweight, fast running, dropping, getting out of the pocket.
Right. Whatever.
So they just didn't translate into the pros.
So it says here that when Peterson kind of began there, he was the beginning of their rise to national prominence.
Okay.
Florida State.
All right.
And it said under Peterson, the Seminoles beat the Florida Gators for the first time in 1964 and earned their first major bowl bid.
Yeah.
So that would have been while you were in college there, right?
Yeah. And then.
But after the creaming.
I got creamed.
And maybe that's really what was the catalyst.
Could have been.
To, you know, send them off. Could have been. They're like, wow, if we can take care of this guy, we could take care of anybody.
We can turn this guy into meat, man. It's now's our chance to move on up.
Well, and Peterson also gave a young assistant by the name of Bobby Bowden his first major college coaching opportunity.
Yeah.
So Bowden was on Peterson's staff.
He was. And then when we were in, when I was in law school at Florida State, which would have been in 67, that's when there was this quarterback receiver duo.
There was Ernest Cook.
No.
A fullback from Daytona Beach.
No.
Calvin Patterson.
Nope.
Running back from Dade County.
No, I'm talking about the quarterback and the wide receiver combo for Florida State. That would have been, both of these guys were from Jacksonville. As a matter of fact, I think they both went to Paxson.
Hmm. They don't say anything about those two guys.
Well, go to 68 then. Maybe it was
68. Well, I mean, I'm just it's just a summary of their history.
No.
Go ahead.
Keep talking. So anyway, so the they did extremely well. When the years we were in law school, they did extremely well and were beating Florida on a regular basis at that point in time. The quarterback that I'm talking about did not translate. He did not go to the pros, but the wide receiver ended up playing for Dallas, and he was good. He was pretty good. Biletnikoff was the guy that I was trying to think of. Fred Biletnikoff was, of course, he was way earlier than 67. I think he was during the Peterson days. It was Steve Tenzie was the quarterback, and then Biletnikoff was his wide receiver.
I got you.
And of course, Biletnikoff was, you know, Hall of Fame, wide receiver and famous. He got married under the goalposts.
Well, it says Biletnikoff and Dexter Jackson were two former players that were named Super Bowl MVP.
Yeah. Well, Jackson, I don't remember. But Tenzie was good. I think he played for the Cleveland Browns. He ended up going to the Browns. So Florida State did really – I think Florida State ended up putting quite a few guys in the pros.
Right. But anyway, so you tried to play with them and that didn't happen. But did you continued obviously as a fan, went to the games while you were in college?
Always been a fan.
Right.
College, you know, was because of Florida State, my relationship with Florida State, obviously I was always a Florida State fan. I guess to some degree I would watch the Florida games. But, you know, Spurrier was the coach, and he was such a pain in the ass. You know, he just just complained about everything, you know, always complaining about, you know, calls and issues. And you know, when they won, you know, he was still complaining. And but during those times, I mean, post Spurrier, you know, they just, Florida was just always bitching and moaning. Yeah, you know, they just bitched and moaned about everything.
Right.
Because Florida State became an ascendant team then, and they were beating Florida on a regular basis. So yeah. You know, not every year.
Did you go to a lot of games while you were in college? Did you attend?
Yeah.
Did you attend?
Yeah. Mainly, but more in law school. When I was in law school, we had, the law school was, believe it or not, we were the card, what do they call it? The card group, you know, in the stands. Mm-hmm. We had cards.
Oh, gotcha.
And you could, you know, they would, and we'd hold up the colored cards and making various designs and stuff. And so that was, but we got to go to every game.
Oh, that's fun.
And back in those days, you had to dress up.
Right.
You had to go, the guys would wear sport coats and, you know, so you can just.
Did mom go with you?
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mom always loved football. She was always a big fan. Of course, she's a huge Alabama fan.
Right.
But, we went to every single home game and thoroughly enjoyed it. And then I guess when we were.
Now, when you were a kid, were you a fan? Were you a
always,
football fan?
Always.
But more pro. Yeah.
More pro because my dad was a huge pro football fan.
A Philly fan? Was he an Eagles fan?
I don't know that he. Yeah. I mean, he more a Colts fan.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the Colts were.
Just because of Unitas and
oh, yeah. That kind of. I mean, the Colts were. And, you know, I mean, Baltimore, Philadelphia, it's they're extremely close geographically.
Right.
So, but no, Philly back in those days, I mean, I'm talking the 50s now because you're talking, you know, when did I get interested in football?
Right.
It was when, you know, my dad was, we'd every Sunday, you know, TV would be on and we'd be watching the games. And it was, I think we only had, I think there was only one channel in Jacksonville then, maybe two TV channels.
Sure.
And we had, and CBS was the one that, you know, was the top network. And they carried, I think they carried all the NFL games. It was all just on CBS, maybe.
Right. I mean, how many teams were there back then? I mean, it couldn't have been.
Yeah, not like that many. You know, the
12, maybe?
Maybe more. I mean, you had, you know.
Because it was still kind of a new. I mean, it wasn't. They were established, obviously, but it was still, especially on TV, I would think that would be kind of a new, you know.
Well, they didn't. The pros didn't really do a lot until. I had a cousin or my mother's cousin played on the Philadelphia Eagles.
Right.
And this would have been back in the late 40s and early 50s. And, you know, when we'd go up to Philly sometimes, you know, he'd be at some of the family gatherings and I would ask him about it. He said it was horrible. You know, you played for nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, they enjoyed playing because they enjoyed the sport.
Right.
But they certainly didn't do it to, you know, earn enough money to live.
Yeah.
You had to have, you would, you know, it was almost like it was semi-pro at that point because you had to hold down a job and you know, it was strictly just catch as catch can on the money. And I don't think that really changed to any appreciable degree until the networks, until I can't remember when it was. It probably would have been, I can't remember when there was the first significant television contract with the NFL. This would have been during Pete Rozelle's. Pete Rozelle was the first commissioner of the NFL that really, really started creating this entire juggernaut that truly became the NFL.
Right.
And he was the guy that that engineered that whole thing. He expanded, you know, some they created, I think, a couple of expansion teams. And then the big thing was they signed a contract with CB. I think might have been at that point maybe CBS and NBC. It would have been when they had, you know, the divisions, the first divisional.
What's it? So the Super Bowl didn't even start until 67.
Oh, yeah. But that was all because of the AFL.
Right. Yeah, because of the merger with the NFL and the AFL. Yeah.
Because it was the so-called World Championship was originally was just the NFL. Whoever won the NFL, you know, whether it was, you know, late in the day when things became, you know, more exciting was when, you know, teams like, you know, Dallas, Green Bay, you know, when that famous Ice Bowl game that they played in Green Bay, you know, I think that was probably 1960. It was either 59 or 60.
Yeah, something. This is saying 1958 when the season's NFL championship game became known as the most exciting game ever played.
Right.
That was when it kind of really started to
and that probably
go on an upward trajectory.
Right. So, but then when, and even I think back even in 59, the AFL was already there. Well,
this said it was founded in 1960.
The
AFL was.
Okay. So that's when I think it was Lamar Hunt. Was the moving force in Kansas City. He and a group of other businessmen decided there was enough excitement with football that they went ahead and they figured they could come up with a competing conference. And so they came up with the AFL.
Right.
And started signing. Their big deal was they started signing NFL players. With really, you know, significant money involved, and also, you know, drafting, all of a sudden became a competition because the NFL at the time, before the AFL came in, you know, it was, if you wanted to play in the pros, whatever they were offering is, that was it. There was no competition.
Right.
And all of a sudden, Lamar Hunt and his group come along and wow, you know, people are coming up with money. I mean, when Namath signed his contract with the Jets, that was huge. And, you know, compared to what they pay players today, it was nothing.
Mm-hmm. But at the time, it was big.
I mean, it was so exciting. Because when I first started, first thing I can remember was watching Johnny Unitas throwing to a guy named Lenny Moore.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that was the most exciting thing that ever happened. Because Moore, you know, was one of these typical nowadays wide receivers that could really turn on the jet, you know, on a fly pattern and just, you know, Unitas was everybody. Unbelievable.
Right.
You know, he could put the ball right. And just, I would just be jumping up and down on the couch with my father, you know, and he, you know, okay, all right, hold it down. You know, but, it was really exciting. And I really got into I really loved the Colts.
Yeah.
And they had they were just some real characters playing football then. And then I read... What did I read? I read a book called Instant Replay by Jerry. Oh God, he was a left guard for the Green Bay Packers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such an amazing book, you know, talking about his history and his background and, you know, what he did as a player. You know, he was from Idaho and just talked about growing up and playing football and what that entailed and then going to college and ending up with Green Bay. And it was such an eye-opener. It just gave you such a background into the players and into coaching.
Right.
You know, and what a coach has to do in order to motivate his players.
Yeah. Especially on a pro level.
Guys are men. I mean, they're young men.
Yeah, but even still, but, I mean,
you know, they're being paid.
Yeah, they're earning a living. Yeah, it's no longer, you know, the idea of, you know, especially in high school and college, you know, you're trying to win a championship and you have a finite amount of time, right? Because you're only going to be in school a certain amount of time. And so it's all about trying to get there. But once you're beyond that and you're in the pros, I mean, of course, it's about winning a championship, but, you know, I feel like it's a different ball game, and you're also being, you know, especially nowadays, I mean, some of the coaches are younger than some of the players. And so as a coach come in and, you know, motivate, back then, I don't think it was that way.
Well, I mean, I think like as an example in the book Instant Replay, you know, they would, back in these days, I mean, this was like, I think starting 1960, they were talking about the fact, I mean, these guys would go out and get drunk, you know. I mean, there was a guy, a wide receiver named Max McGee that played drunk.
Right.
You know, and he tells the story, you know, that.
Well, I mean, there's guys that, like, I mean, Lawrence Taylor talks about all kinds of drug use before, during, and after the games.
I mean, it was, but you just realize, I mean, these guys are out partying all night, you know, coming to the game half shot, going out and playing ball. Obviously,
rock star lifestyle.
I'm sure, you know, these days, today, the chances of something like that happening are much, you know, are minimized. But you know, going to the coaching, you know, Lombardi, you look at these guys. I mean, Lombardi was a real disciplinarian. So he just wouldn't put up with that shit. He, you know, but then on the other hand, what do? They would fine him. But, you know, these guys like Paul Hornung, that was the halfback, you know, that was their big running back for Green Bay. You know, he was a pretty boy and he was out hotting around town. And you know, Lombardi, at the end of the day, you can fine him, you can discipline him, but you got to figure a way to motivate these guys and get them. So his big deal was he personalized the structure to each player.
Right.
So he was smart enough to figure out how to deal with each guy and to get them the most, but at the same time focusing on team. You know, hey, this is a team. We're playing together. So he was, you know, Lombardi, this whole book was really, you know, it was about Green Bay, clearly, but it talked about the NFL just in general.
I still feel like that goes on today. I mean, there's, you know, in college sports and even in high school, you know, the star players get the star treatment.
Yeah.
It's always how it goes. You know, I mean, if you got a player and the player knows that they're the best player on the team, that they can, you know, they can get away with things that the players that are at the end of the line that are out there just working hard, trying to, you know, just maybe make first string or whatever, that, you know, they aren't going to get any kind of preferential treatment, but these other kids, they do. Yeah. I mean, I watch it at high school. I watch it in, you know, you see it in college. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot more scrutiny now because there's a lot more eyeballs, right? There's more information available. Everybody's got a phone. Yeah. And, you know, everybody's got a camera. So, you know, the chances of you being caught these days are much higher than it was back then, where there wasn't as much, you know, coverage per se.
Well, and I mean, the criminal activity. You know, some of the stuff that's going, you know, like, you know, sexual assault. Or just physical assault.
Yeah.
I mean,
the whole thing that happened with that Florida player, Aaron Hernandez, where he was involved in, you know, murdering somebody and, you know, all of that.
But then it turned out he had a brain injury.
Yeah.
You don't know how how much that fed into the whole thing.
Sure.
But at the same time, he was, you know, it was just a horror show. I was just watching, I guess it was the documentary on the Patriots that was on.
The Brady one?
Yeah. They focused, that was part of one of the episodes focused on Hernandez.
Yeah. But they kind of just glossed over it. They don't really get too deep into the.
They got deep enough. I mean, it clearly showed what had happened. It was, but at the same time, well, anyway, there's been a lot, obviously, again, because of social media,
right?
Cameras and hotels and catching people. I forget who it was, the guy that cold cocked his girlfriend in the elevator.
Oh yeah, that was Ray. He was a running back.
I think. But he
played for Baltimore.
He cold cocked her. Yeah. I mean, he just flattened her.
Yeah.
Dave Chappelle had what did he call it? He said, what a gangsta move. just with all his just straight armed her right in the face, knocked her out cold. It's just amazing what some of these guys do. But then on the other hand, you know, they're playing in an extremely physical, aggressive game.
Yeah.
And maybe for some people, it's hard to turn it off and on. You know, it's living a different life. And I mean, they're culturally, each guy is raised differently in his own.
Right.
So.
But not only that, I mean, the threats, you know, are coming from everywhere. You know, the threats to your, you know, like you're saying, I mean, who knows where these guys are coming from? They come from all walks of life.
Yeah.
And if it's a guy who came from a hard life that was doing hard living just to get to this point.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'm sure the threats of it all being taken away are coming from everywhere. You know,
I think Hernandez actually in a gang. I think he came up. He was in a gang. I mean, he was tatted up. He had gangster tats on, and I recall. I think he had his past was clearly, you know, he had that issue going on.
Right.
But that being said, I mean, not to focus on Aaron Hernandez, I think that's true of all of these guys, and I think the players are so idolized, you know, and. At the end of the day, I think the kids just have this, a lot of kids, especially kids that maybe don't have a path to some other way of earning a living.
Right.
You know, they're looking at going to the pros as that's how they're going to make their buck, so to speak.
Well, I mean, even now, the base salary is like somewhere in the six, you know, it's somewhere in the six figures.
I think the minimum salary is $600,000.
I was going to say $400,000. Somewhere in that range. I mean, it's somewhere.
Even for,
you know, that's $500,000 a year. I mean, for any regular Joe, that's a good chunk of money.
You would think, but, you know. It's but how many kids can get in that?
Right.
It's like winning the lottery.
Exactly.
Winning the lottery.
I mean, some of it's luck, some of it's skill,
right.
You know, some of it's
right
passion. Yeah. It's your
agent. If you get a good agent, you know, and publicist, you got to have a publicist that gets your name out and
well, if you can't make it into one of these, you know, and obviously nowadays the landscape has changed with everything with college now and the transfer portal and,
right.
You know, the opportunity to get in, to go to different colleges to try to, you know, hopefully get on a winning team or at least a team that's going to be visible, right?
Yeah.
You want to be on a team that's got some sort of, you know, TV deal that's going to get out there and, you know, so you can get showcased. But then you got to make it onto the field. You got to be one of the starting people that are out there.
But you can, I mean, at least you can make some money, in college with NIL. Now you can, yeah. And even if you don't make it in the pros, at least maybe you can make, you can get yourself a little, pot right. of money that can help you start a business or do something else. Who knows?
Maybe. But I would say most of those kids that are making NIL money in college are most likely going to go to the pros because
I'm sure
they're marketing on, they're banking on star names,
yeah.
star quality. So yeah. if you weren't a star in college, you aren't going to be getting a whole lot of NIL deals going on.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're not sought after.
I wonder what the percent, I've never even looked. I wonder what the percentage of kids that are drafted that actually make the team. I've never even.
Have you ever watched the Hard Knocks, the HBO Hard Knocks show?
I don't know whether I have or not.
They get into a little bit of that where they let, they release guys.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah. A lot of guys are not, I don't know that it's the majority, but there's a lot of guys that are knocked out.
What is it? They can only have six, is it 64 players? I can't remember how many players they're allowed to,
that might include like a taxi squad, but
right.
I think the practice active, squad. Isn't it like 56 or 58 is the max on the, that they can field as part of the team? I don't even remember, but it's small and
right.
Yeah. And there's 32 teams.
Yeah. 53.
Yeah. So you're looking at like a little over 1500 people, that are that are actually playing in each season. I mean, it's ridiculous. The chances of making that are just so tiny. It's unbelievable.
So preseason, they're allowed to have 90 players on the team.
Yeah. They're cutting.
And then by August 29th, they have to cut down to 53 players.
Yep.
That's on the roster.
So that's more than 40% of the players have to be cut. That's unbelievable.
So they do have the practice squad, though, which is a group of 14 players.
Yeah, but those guys aren't making squad.
No, they aren't making anything. And, who knows if they'll actually be able to be pulled up or not,
Yep.
But if that's the dream.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, so you were a Colts fan growing up.
Well, I was a Colts fan through 1958. Or 60, I guess. 58, okay. 60. And that's when I read Jerry Kramer's book.
Gotcha.
Instant Replay. And I became an instant Packers fan.
Oh, you were a Green Bay fan.
Yeah, I've been an instant Packers fan. Even though Philadelphia Eagles, I think, won the Super Bowl in 62. Norm Van Brocklin was the quarterback. And I think that was the last, because then
they didn't ever win it again.
Or maybe until it was 61.
Recently.
Yeah, no. They didn't win it again until what? Peter, the other Peterson.
Yeah. Our Peterson now.
Yeah. He was the one that won the, with, what's his, Nick Foles?
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, originally it was Carson Wentz.
Yeah,
but Foles was having a hell of a season, yeah. And Wentz went down with a.
But Foles is the one that won the game.
Yep.
Yep. But anyway, so I was a big, always have been, I guess, since that time, I was a Packers fan. Never liked Dallas. Always loved the 49ers too. Loved the 49ers.
Well, your brother was a
he lived out there.
I don't know if he still is.
Yeah, but yeah.
He used to love the Niners.
Yeah. Montana, the quarterbacks and these players, Jerry Rice and always the twosome, it's the famous quarterback with the famous receiver, really kind of generates all the pizzazz, at least as far as the press is concerned. So, Montana and Jerry Rice.
So the Eagles won, they won championships in 48, 49, 60.
60, yeah.
But then they also won a Super Bowl in 78.
Yeah.
In 1978, the Eagles pulled out an improbable win over the New York Giants.
Oh.
After the Giants fumbled the football in the final seconds.
Does it say?
I'd have to go.
Wasn't Van Brocklin.
Further into it here. That was Buck Shaw was the coach.
Buck Shaw?
For the 60s.
Oh, in 78?
For 1960.
Oh, yeah, no. I wasn't even aware. Who was it? Oh, it doesn't say the coach was in 78?
I'm looking here. I'm
going. You're looking.
I'm researching.
Yeah. But get it. So my favorite teams back then were the Packers and the Niners would have been my two most favorite teams. I got semi interested in Denver for a while, but mostly it was either the Packers or the Niners. Never got into the. I never was a Dallas fan at all. And the East Coast, I don't know, for whatever the East Coast teams never. I never got excited about the Bear. The only Bears team that I enjoyed was the one I loved to watch games with when Dick Butkus was playing and the famous defensive struggles. Oh, in Pittsburgh.
Didn't win a Super Bowl in 78. I'm wrong. Sorry. They just won a playoff game.
I didn't think so.
That was
but anyway, Pittsburgh was the other team.
Yeah, Steelers.
I fell in love with because of, I can't think of the quarterback.
Terry Bradshaw.
Terry Bradshaw. Bradshaw. But they were, the reason I think I got so really interested in them was their famous defense.
Ah, yes.
They just
were. Jack Lambert.
Oh, my God. They were just murder on a stick. They were just killed. But that was
Mean Joe Green.
Oh, yeah. I mean, things were just, I mean, it was pretty nasty.
I mean, it was fun back then. I mean, they had names for, you know, Steel Curtain.
Yeah.
And the Purple People Eaters.
Yeah.
Minnesota. Yeah. I mean, you don't have that these days. They don't have that kind of fun
they
type
don't do
stuff.
That anymore. That was a trend.
And even the players had, you know, fun nicknames that really you don't really hear that
Broadway Joe
anymore.
I mean, you look at somebody like Patrick Mahomes, you know, these days, him and Travis Kelce, I mean, they're another duo, but you know, I mean, I don't know of any special name for him, but he is,
except for the State Farm commercials.
Oh, you know, and listen. He's smart. The coach he's unbelievable. He's really cool. Andy.
Yes, Andy Reid. Yeah. Which he had to leave Philadelphia to finally go and win some championships.
He did well at Philadelphia.
Oh no, he was fantastic.
Yeah, but
just couldn't get over the hump.
Yeah, he had the opportunity. I mean, Lamar Hunt gave him the opportunity to come out to Kansas City and look at what he's done.
Oh yeah. Well, when I was growing up, I wasn't as big into football. Like, I mean, I remember watching it. You know, I mean, that was when I was a kid. It was Dan Marino and Joe Montana battling it out. And I mean, I was always a Marino fan. I like Marino. I also like the Bengals for some reason. I don't know why. Yeah.
That's interesting.
But Boomer Esiason.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Doing the icky shuffle. And of course, the Chicago Bears, you know, Walter Payton and that stuff. I mean, I remember it, but it was never like, I wasn't like you. It wasn't like an every Sunday thing where we were, you know, we didn't sit on the couch together. I don't even think I knew when I was a kid who were your teams. And I don't remember it. It wasn't like a big thing. It wasn't in our house at the time. It wasn't.
Well, mom that never big a deal. It.
And
she would watch or she would want it. Although back in those days, I don't know that she was that excited about Alabama. I mean, she was always an Alabama fan because she went there, but not to the extent that she is now.
Yeah.
Holy moly.
I remember Florida State was a big deal. You know, you like to watch the college games and watch Florida State, but they were always good, but they weren't getting over the hump. I always remember it was always the wide right field goal or they always lost it in the end. Yeah. And you were always there like, oh, here we go. And it's the,
oh yeah,
another, the Seminole choke going to happen.
Yeah. But then they finally won the national championship under Bowden.
Yeah, when I was in college.
Yeah,
but that's when I went to college. That's when I really got into
football. Oh, you got to be a real fan
because I didn't even I was in the dorms and it wasn't even really on my radar. But my roommate and a couple other friends were going to get tickets.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was, it was a fun thing to do, go to the football games. And Colorado at the time was actually
a decent team.
They were a perennial powerhouse. In 90, they had just won the championship. They had just won the national championship.
Yeah.
And I remember kind of rooting for them, seeing them on TV. And so we started going to the games and I just absolutely fell in love with it.
I thought it was so much fun. They won the national championship and then they went straight into the Trasher.
No.
Oh.
Because they stayed. I mean, they didn't get back to that level, but they stayed up there. And when I was in college there, they were in the top five.
Well, didn't you? I thought you were friends. You actually were friends with a couple of football players. Well,
I was, yeah. But I mean, they were freshmen. They weren't. Yeah. One of the guys ended up defensive lineman. And the guy, I mean, couldn't have been the most soft-spoken, nicest guy. I mean, huge beast of a person, but
a just sweetheart.
Quiet, soft-spoken, yeah. Super nice guy. But on the field, the guy was just a nightmare. I mean, just killing people. And he was really, I think he went on to actually play in the pros. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. But there was another guy who was an offensive lineman who we were also friends with. So these two just
monster guys.
He would come and sit on our couch and like take up, two-thirds of the couch. And I'm on the, I'm just a little guy. And so, But I remember because they played, what was it? It wasn't the first year I was there in 93. They did it okay that year. But the next year, they were really good. That was the Cordell Stewart year. Michael Westbrook. Rashawn Salaam won the Heisman Trophy that year. I mean, they were really good.
That's right. And, I forgot about that.
That was the year they had the miracle at Michigan where Cordell threw the ball like 60 something yards in the air, tipped it up into the end zone.
And
that sent him off into the stratosphere. Still one of the greatest college football plays that I've ever witnessed.
Well, he did live. He ended up doing well at Pittsburgh. He played for Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Yeah.
He did real well for a while.
I think they ended up in a Super Bowl, I think.
Yeah.
But I don't think they won with
but
him.
He did well in the pros.
Yeah. Yeah. So. But it was a lot of fun for me because they were always really good. Couldn't quite get back to the championship game, but they were always, in the top five. And so, but then after Bill McCartney left, who was their coach, that's when they started to slip downward.
Yeah.
And then they came back briefly and, I remember you and I watching the Colorado Nebraska game in your house, where they just torched Nebraska, who was like the number one team. Everybody thought they were unbeatable, and Colorado just took them to the house. And I remember just being so happy and so excited.
And now look who's coaching Colorado.
That's right. I mean, it comes full circle.
Dion,
our two worlds have merged together. So
he was an amazing player, I tell you, Deion Sanders.
But then also while I was in college, also as well as I was really ramping up to fall in love with football, Jacksonville got an NFL team.
They did.
And so that also, really amped me up, even though at the time I couldn't, you know, I couldn't stand Jacksonville, but
yeah,
it was my hometown.
And well, they had that.
I was so excited for them to get the team. I thought it would, that was such an awesome thing. And
well, it was a hell of a pull.
So I mean, good for the city.
Yeah, it was good for the city. And they, you know, they did have that one blip early on, you know, where they beat
the Broncos.
Yeah, they played.
They
played for the, I think the,
They ended up in the AFC Championship
game. Yeah,
but lost, but that year, which was hilarious because, you know, I'm in Boulder, basically Denver.
Yeah.
And everybody's like losing their minds. The Broncos are going
to win the Super Bowl.
Nobody's going to beat them. Elway's finally going to get that elusive Super Bowl ring that he's always wanted. And here come the Jaguars. Who, you know, I mean, what chance? They're coming into Denver to play in Denver. They're, you know, it was like maybe 2 years after their inaugural season.
Yeah, I think it was like happened. 2 or 3 years. Yeah.
And so, you know, who are they? And, you know,
Mark Brunell.
I'm basically in a sea of Bronco fans and just loving every minute of what I'm watching. That the Jaguars were just, and I mean, they didn't run away with it.
No.
It wasn't like they blew them out, but
no.
But the fact that they were in the game and then that they won the game, and man, it put me on cloud nine. I think it put me more so on cloud nine just the fact that I could shove it in all the Broncos fans' faces at the time because I was so tired of hearing about it.
Yeah.
And so when the Jaguars came in, I was excited, and that was it. That was awesome. That was fun, and they made it to the AFC Championship game. Saying, and they had that
wide receiver duo.
Yeah,
Lightning and Thunder.
Thunder and Lightning.
Yeah,
yeah. It was Jimmy
Stewart.
No, not Jimmy Stewart.
And it was not Cordell.
Keenan McCardell.
Yeah,
and Jimmy Smith.
Jimmy Smith.
Yeah,
that's right. Jimmy Smith.
Yeah.
And Brunell throwing the ball, and then they had their famous left tackle, Tony Baselli, which was their first round draft pick.
Yeah,
amazing stuff.
And they had,
but after that, they just tanked.
Natrone Means,
was their running back? Yeah, but they just tanked after that. They never did anything after that.
No, they never really came back from that because the next year they actually went 13-3 because they were ranked really highly. They were actually, you know, a Super Bowl contender the next year. After that, they were like, okay, this team's for real.
Yeah.
After they beat
them, they
and then they came back, but then they lost. Like they got a first round bye and then lost.
Yeah.
And that was kind of their
everything downfall. Else went downhill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they ended up back. And the AFC Championship game again, years and years later.
That
game
years and years later.
With our man Bortles. And they ended up, but they got beat by the Patriots. And that was, Patriots went on to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
They were that close.
They've had some, I mean, their draft picks, talking about, you know, drafts, they just always ended up being. You know, when you watch some of these pundits, you know, do ratings on the draft. I mean, Jacksonville used to be rated like C- and D.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it was because I think literally it was because the owner simply wasn't a football guy.
Right.
He was, you know, he's just a businessman.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't even remember.
What do you do, shoes? Hmm. His shoe salesman, shoe guy.
Well, he owned a couple of. I mean, his claim to, you know, monetary fame was that he had two different shoe companies, women's shoe companies that did very well. But in any event, you know, they're. I think what's his name, you know, lost the. He. I don't know whether. I think he became – they ended up hiring a general manager, and he then just became the coach Or maybe they just let him go. I can't remember.
Well, when Coughlin was there, he was a GM slash coach.
Well, but that's how it started out. But I think eventually,
Wayne Weaver. That's what I'm trying. That's
they either let him to the owner, the majority owner, because there were a few. I remember the original partnership in Jacksonville. The original, when they were looking for what they called the majority partner,
right,
was a guy named Tom Petway, who was an insurance guy in town. He was the pivotal guy with the team, you know, shepherding it along. And he and the mayor, a guy named Jake Godbold, were the ones that really were the moving force and made the pitch for Jacksonville to get a team. And it was.
I mean, we were a long shot. We were such a long shot because there were other like huge markets like St. Louis, I think was in there, and there were some other big cities that.
Well, but both of the teams that they added went to small markets.
Yeah, Carolina. Well, I mean, Carolina is smaller, but they're definitely bigger than Jacksonville.
Oh yeah, but you know. It was small. It was Charlotte. Still considered a small market.
Yeah.
So,
but that's what the NFL was trying to do. They wanted to get. Well, you know, they liked that idea of, you know, like Green Bay. You know, like let's move into.
But now they're talking about, you know, going overseas. You know, and maybe expanding to Europe.
Right.
So.
Well, there was an NFL Europe for a little while there. I think that it was like, I don't know, 7-8 years they had an NFL Europe where different countries had teams. And I don't know that it didn't take off. It wasn't a big deal. You don't remember that?
I don't even want to call that at all.
Yeah.
No.
They did. They had one. Because it's kind of like how
it must have been like
the XFL like or the UFL is now, where once the NFL season ended, they play the NFL Europe would take over, and so you could continue watching football all year round. That's the idea.
Oh,
but it never it didn't. Yeah, here NFL Europe, it didn't last. It
I do not even remember that.
Well,
shows you how interested I was.
Originally founded in. 1989 as the World League of American Football.
And was that part of the NFL?
And it began play in 1991 and lasted for two seasons. And then after a two-year hiatus, it returned as a six-team European league. And then it completely dissolved in 2007.
And this was owned by the NFL?
Mm-hmm. It's called NFL Europe League.
Huh. Boy, they must not have done anything as far as generating revenue.
Nope. Well, it went from 10 teams to 6 teams to nada. So I don't know. I don't know that, you know, they keep saying, I mean, they keep trying to pull the team away from Jacksonville, right? That they kept saying it's going to go to London.
I think they're talking about maybe creating, actually doing expansion.
Right.
With two teams in Europe, you know, but the problem is, I mean, it is a problem. The team that has to come from the United States to Europe is at a distinct disadvantage. It's tough to, you know, make that, what is it, six 6-hour
time difference
and then get acclimatized physically. It just really kills you. So, I don't know, but we'll see.
Well, to wrap this up.
Yeah.
So we love football.
We do. We do.
Not enough to watch it year round.
No.
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 Because right now they have the UFL going on.
We went to a few arena football games. Yeah.
I actually shot a different arena football game one time.
Yeah. That was exciting.
Yeah.
Noisy as hell.
That's I don't think they're doing that anymore either. I think that.
Oh, really? Did that stop?
Yeah, I think so.
That was wild.
But anyway, we look forward to football returning again in the fall. Because there's a couple more days of the draft left.
Yep.
You know, so hopefully Jacksonville gets in the right picks this year. So
we shall see.
I mean, is Jacksonville now your number one team, or are you still Green Bay's still your number one team?
Jacksonville's never been my number one team.
Oh, wow. No. So who is your still Green Bay?
No, I you know, Green Bay. I still, the 49ers and the Niners, still I enjoy really kind of tracking them. Okay. But I'd say Green Bay.
Okay. So, I mean, if we had to hold your feet to the coals here, Green Bay is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe. Well, sounds like you're a little fair weather over there.
Yeah. I don't know. Okay.
Hey, you got to go with the good and the bad. That's a true fan. You get a team and you stick with them.
I know.
But clearly I
can switch my allegiances sometimes.
Okay.
When it's appropriate.
Yeah, I guess so. So if the Jags make the Super Bowl, are we going?
Super Bowl?
Yeah. No.
I will never go to a Super Bowl game.
Really?
No.
Why?
Have no interest. It's going, you know, it's one of these. I don't like crowds. I don't like massive. When I went to the Masters with my friend George Foster, we went, and it was just for
the shout out George Foster.
George Foster from Australia, there from Sydney.
I'll say.
Yeah. We went to the practice round on Wednesday and that's the day they do the par three.
Right.
And there was 40,000 people there. It was horrible.
We hate that.
I'll never do it again. Never. I'll never go back to the Masters, ever. Okay.
Wow.
And I don't like, and to be honest with you, golf to me is not, I don't.
What about when you and I went to the Colorado-Florida State game?
Oh, that was great. That was fun.
That was okay.
But then it's with your buddies. You know, I went with your guy, you know, your group of guys.
I mean, I had my shirt ripped off on a rooptop bar.
That's half the fun.
We got a call that my daughter was on the way to the hospital at the time. I mean, that was emotions.
Yeah.
Emotions were high.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But football's my sport. I'm not a basketball fan. I'll watch a game every once in a blue moon, but nah. Okay. Basketball, no. And
golf, definitely no.
No.
That's out. Soccer, no.
Hockey, really. I enjoy a hockey game.
Went to a Ghost Pirates game.
Never really got into it.
Right. Saw the Avalanche play when I lived out in Colorado.
Oh, yeah.
During their Stanley Cup runs, which was fun.
Yeah. It's an exciting game.
Yeah.
I was watching, Al Michaels. Dan Patrick was interviewing Al Michaels.
Call.
And Al Michaels said the toughest sport to call as a broadcaster is hockey.
Mm.
He said it's so fast. Change of possession is happening all the time. And it's just very difficult to call a game.
Did he say, do you believe in miracles?
He did. He was the guy.
That's it.
He's my favorite. He's probably my favorite broadcaster.
Not John Madden. Don't like him.
No. I mean, I enjoy John Madden.
Right.
I enjoyed it. But Pat Summerall, he and Summerall together were a fabulous broadcast team.
How about Cassell?
But yeah, I mean, when Monday Night Football was at its height, which was, what's his name? The guy that was the quarterback for Dandy Don Meredith and Howard Cassell and Faultless Frank Gifford.
Right.
That was Monday night was the game of the week.
There you
that
go.
Was it was fun. It was just fun. And that's when Monday night became the game. Now not so much.
That's what we're looking to become right here on Casual Chats.
That's true.
We're looking to become your Monday night.
Yeah, so that's our take on football past to present.
Yeah.
Fun times.
Yeah. Best times.
Yeah. How about that?
So I feel like that episode was a touchdown, if you ask me.
Oh, I like that.
You like it?
Hands held high. Go for it.
See y'all next time.
Yep. Have a good one.